he asked. Chang spoke in a quiet, placid voice, as if describing events that had happened to someone else a long time ago.
When the rat seized my leg, I fainted with fear. I was unconscious when it dragged me away. I awoke in a charnel house of bones and putrefying remains.
The doctor nodded.
The thing couldn't have been hungry. It was saving you for later. Rats don't keep a very tidy larder.
Chang went on calmly.
I lay in that place of horror and cursed my benefactor, Wang Jiang, who had brought me to such a fate. Hatred gave me the strength to drag myself here. I planned to destroy my false god, the last act of the great Wang Jiang. But there was no one here. The rats had fled.
You should have destroyed him long ago, said Leela sternly.
Perhaps, but I believed in him, just as I believed in myself, the great magician, Li Shen Chang.
It was a good act, said the doctor gently, one of the best I've ever seen. Chang smiled bitterly.
Until Wang Chiang shamed me. The whole theater saw my failure. I lost face.
Chang's voice faded, and the doctor leaned forward urgently.
Tell me about the House of the Dragon.
Chang's voice was very feeble.
Soon, the great Chang was to have performed before the Queen Empress, me, the son of a peasant. The House of the Dragon, Chang, where is it?
Chang struggled to focus his eyes on the doctor.
It is his temple, his fortress, prepared for him by the Tong.
Chang struggled to sit up.
Beware the eye of the dragon, doctor!
He cried and slumped back onto the mattress. The doctor shook him gently.
Li Shen, where is it?
Now Chang's voice was a feeble whisper.
Soon I shall rejoin my ancestors. Already I see them walking to greet me from the Palace of Jade. Now I shall cross the Golden Bridge of the Gods. The address, Chang!
Shouted the doctor. Chang made a last effort to speak, but no words came out. He pitched forward on the mattress and lay quite still.
He is dead,
said Leela flatly. The doctor sighed.
And he's left us with a Chinese puzzle. Well, there's no point in staying here. Let's get back to the professor.
Mr. Sin sat, smiling as ever, on his throne beside the dragon stool. Beside him stood Greel, waiting impatiently. Black-clad members of the Tong entered the room and prostrated themselves before him.
Well, he snarled, where is it?
The Tong member who had succeeded Li as leader of the group was called Ho. He stepped forward, quaking with terror.
Bag is gone, Lord! We look all places in theatre. Bag not there!
Greel stormed down the steps of the throne, and the terrified men scattered before him.
You incompetent lice! He raged. You crawling, mindless dogs! That bag contains parts for the machine by which I live, and the key to the time cabinet. I'll find it if I have to take this accursed city apart, stone by stone.
Greel's pacing about had brought him close to the window. He broke off suddenly and stared out. When he spoke next, it was in a voice of sinister calm.
Oh, were you followed here? Followed, Lord.
Greel pointed to the window. Nervously, Ho came nearer and looked out. Two figures lurked by the gas lamp on the corner, obviously keeping watch on the house. Greel stared hard at the two men.
One of them is Jago, the man who owns the theater. They must have followed you here after the search.
Greel was thinking aloud.
They expected you to return to the theater and were waiting. Which means they have found the bag. Bring them to me, alive.
Jago and Lightfoot stood huddled against a wall, looking up at the big detached house on the other side of the road.
This must be their hideaway, right enough, said Lightfoot. Damned impudence. This is a thoroughly respectable area.
It was a road of solidly built suburban residences, each set well back from the road in its own grounds. Houses that were much like Lightfoot's own. The professor's plan had worked better than he dared hope. They had arrived at the theatre in time to find a band of Tong assassins busily ransacking the place. Restraining the indignant Jago from calling the police, Lightfoot had persuaded him to wait outside the theatre until the search was abandoned, and the villains drove away in a waiting carriage. Summoning a passing cab, Lightfoot and Jago had followed their quarry across London to this quiet, secluded road. Jago rubbed his hands together to warm them.
Pity there are too many of them to tackle, eh, Professor? I was just itching for a fight.
Lightfoot smiled at his companion's enthusiasm.
Thing is, Mr. Jago, what do we do now?
Adjourn for a little liquid refreshment, suggested Jago hopefully.
I know a little tavern not far from here.
Lightfoot shook his head.
I'm afraid not. I think one of us should stay here on watch while the other returns to the doctor and the police.
Splendid idea, said Jago promptly. I'll be as quick as I can, Professor.
Lightfoot touched his arm and pointed. Too late, I'm afraid, Mr. Jago. A ring of black-clad Chinese appeared out of the darkness, encircling them, creeping steadily closer.
Oh, corks, said Jago faintly.
Lightfoot took a firm grip on his cudgel.
Backs to the wall, I'm afraid, Mr. Jago.
Jago doubled his fists.
"Keep off, you lot, I warn you!" he quavered. "I'm a tiger when my dander's up!"
The Chinese came forward in a silent rush. Lightfoot and Jago fought valiantly, but they were hopelessly outnumbered. They disappeared beneath a pile of their attackers, and minutes later they were being dragged semi-conscious into the house. The heavy door slammed behind them. The quiet suburban street was peaceful once more. Battered and bleeding, Lightfoot and Jago were thrown at Greel's feet. Jago shuddered as the sinister figure limped towards them. At a nod from Greel, they were dragged to their feet. He glared malevolently at them.
So, you choose to spy on the House of the Dragon? That is unwise. You will suffer for it.
You'll be the one to suffer once the police arrive, said Lightfoot bravely.
Greel laughed.
The police, huh? Do you hear that, Mr. Sin? They take us for simpletons.
Mr. Sin seemed to smile on his little throne. Jago tried to back up Lightfoot's bluff.
The police will be here, don't you worry. They are not far behind us.
You told them you were coming here?
Oh, of course, said Lightfoot. We're not fools, you know.
Greel struck him savagely across the face.
Lies! You did not know where you were going. You followed my men here.
Greel sprang on Jago and seized him by the throat.
Why were you waiting at the theatre?
Jago glanced desperately at his companion.
Why were we waiting at the theatre, Lightfoot?
He croaked.
Lightfoot folded his arms.
I refuse to answer. Do as you please with us. I say, steady on,
gasped Jago.
All very well for Lightfoot to be so defiant. It wasn't his throat.
Greel tightened his grip.
Then I will tell you. You were waiting for my men to collect the bag.
Powerless in Greel's grip, Jago gasped.
You're choking me to death. Exactly. Now, where is the bag?
Jago gave a strangled cry, and Lightfoot shouted, let him go.
Greel squeezed harder, and Jago began sagging at the knees.
bag is at my house!" shouted Lightfoot. "Now for pity's sake, release him!"
Greel let go of Jago, who dropped choking to the floor.
"Very well, you will both die later, and slowly it will give pleasure to my servants."
Greel gestured to the watching members of the Tong.
"Now put them with the other prisoners and prepare my carriage. We have work to do."
The doctor was reading Jago's note out loud to Leela. "My dear doctor, contained in this capacious carpet bag, which I discovered inadvertently in the cellar, is a collection of sundry items of a baffling nature. The professor and I are keeping observation on the theatre, and shortly hope to report to you the whereabouts of the mysterious Weng Chiang, your fellow detective, H.G.J.
"What does it mean, doctor?"
"It means they're in trouble," said the doctor ruefully. He opened the bag and rummaged inside. "Spare parts for an organic distillation set up, by the look of it."
"Aha!"
The doctor took a saucer-shaped pendant from the bag and held it up exultantly.
"Eureka! You know what this is, Leela?"
Leela gave him a look.
"You ask only so that you can tell me. It's the trionic lattice for the time cabinet. It's impossible to open it without it."
"You mean it is a key?"
"Exactly. Our black-masked friend isn't just a scientific fool. He's absent-minded, too. First he has the key without the cabinet. Now he's got the cabinet without the key.
Perhaps he has another Eureka."
The doctor grinned.
"Eureka is Greek. For this bath is too hot," he said obscurely. "No, there can't be another key of this combination."
"In that case he will return to the theatre. We must go."
The doctor didn't move, and Leela looked reprovingly at him.
"Our friends are in danger, doctor. We must help them."
The doctor pointed to the ashes in the grate. The coal had burnt away to a fine ash.
"Lightfoot keeps a good fire, so we know he's been out of the house for some time. We'll do no good rushing all over London looking for Weng Chiang. Much easier to wait for him to come here."
Leela stood very still, frowning in concentration.
"When our enemy finds the bag has been taken from the theatre, he will soon discover that Lightfoot and Jago are watching him. He will capture them, force them to tell him where it is, and return here to find it."
"You're learning to think at last."
"You thought of all that at once, doctor?"
"Well, almost at once," said the doctor modestly.
Leela looked relieved.
"For a moment I thought you feared to attack our enemy. Where shall we set our ambush?"
She went over to the side cabinet and took one of Lightfoot's carving knives from a drawer. She found a sharpening stone and began putting a better edge on the knife.
Happily she looked up at the doctor. "It is time that we did battle with this underground crab."
Lightfoot and Jago had been thrown into a gas-lit basement kitchen and locked in. Two young women lay unconscious against the wall, and Lightfoot was examining them. Jago looked on gloomily.
"Are they dead, Professor?"
"Drugged, I'd say. He must send those fiends of his to kidnap them off the streets. What unspeakable horror must lie behind that mask he wears."
Lightfoot sighed despondently, and began pacing about the room.
"Afraid I don't see any way out of this, Jago. I think we're done for."
Jago tried to be optimistic.
"You're forgetting the doctor, Professor. He's a trained investigator, remember. A speck of mud, a fleck of paint. Clues like that speak volumes to a great detective. I'll wager he's on our track this very minute."
Lightfoot stopped his pacing.
"I say, Jago, look at this."
He pointed to a panel in the wall.
"One of those service hatches. Dumb waiters, they call them. Professor, I don't see how you can think of food at a time like this."
"My dear man, I'm not thinking of food. We can take the shelves out, squeeze inside, and make our escape from this room."
"By Jiminy, you're right," said Jago exultantly. "We'll outwit the blighters yet."
Hurriedly, they pulled out the shelves, and with some difficulty squeezed themselves inside the service hatch.
"Those ropes don't look too sound,"
said Jago apprehensively.
Lightfoot smiled.
"He that is down need fear no fall, Mr. Jago."
A quotation from Bunyan.
"Very consoling," said Jago gloomily.
Lightfoot seized a rope, and Jago did the same.
"Right! Heave! And heave!"
With much puffing and groaning, they hauled the hatch up the chute, until at last they were opposite the hatch on the floor above. They shoved it open and sprang out, to find themselves in what appeared to be a Chinese temple. From the top of a flight of steps, a dragon idol leered malevolently down at them.
"This isn't the dining room," whispered Jago.
"It isn't the way out either," said Lightfoot sadly. He pointed towards the door. Two enormous tong hatchet men were advancing menacingly towards them. Jago sighed.
"Well, never mind, Professor. At least we tried."
Leela studied the layout of the dining room, considering how to set her ambush.
"We should try to trap them in a crossfire, Doctor."
To Leela's annoyance, the Doctor didn't seem to be taking her combat preparations very seriously. He pointed to a bowl of nuts on a side table.
"A crossfire of what? Hazelnuts? Bread pellets? Well, surely the Professor must have weapons here. In a place this size, there must be fixed strong points to defend the approaches."
The Doctor grinned affectionately at her. "I brought you to the wrong century. You'd have loved Agincourt. Stay here. I'll see what I can find."
The Doctor left the room and began rummaging under the stairs, wondering where Lightfoot kept the fowling piece that had done so well against the giant rat. Alone in the dining room, Leela stood with her back to the curtains, gazing thoughtfully round the room. She didn't see the long-nailed, claw-like hand that appeared around the edge of the curtain. It was holding a pad of soft material. Suddenly Greel sprang out from behind the curtain and clapped the pad over Leela's face. She struggled wildly, but within seconds her head was swimming from the effects of the chloroform. With the last of her strength, she wriggled round and clawed desperately at Greel, ripping the black leather mask from his face. At the sight of what lay beneath the mask, Leela froze in horror. Greel's face was warped, distorted, bent. Eyes, nose and mouth jumbled nightmarishly together, like a plasticine face squashed by a fist. Leela had only a moment to take in that terrible sight. The pad came down over her face, and she sank into unconsciousness. Chapter 14. The Prisoners of Greel. When the Doctor came back into the room some few minutes later, there was no sign of Leela. Greel, his mask now back in place, stood waiting by the curtained window. The Doctor beamed, apparently unsurprised. "Ah, good, we've been waiting for you."
"On the contrary, Doctor, it is we who are waiting for you."
Greel gestured towards the door, and the Doctor turned. Mr. Sin stalked into the room. Behind him came a little group of tong hatchet men, one of them supporting the unconscious Leela. "Life's little surprises," said the Doctor softly. His voice hardened as he looked at Leela. "What have you done to her?"
"Nothing yet."
"Take my advice." "Don't," said the Doctor quietly.
"Your advice!"
Greel gave a scornful laugh.
"You are an unusual man, Doctor. But in opposing me, you have gone far out of your depth. You have something of mine, I believe. I want it back."
"Something of yours? Now what could it be, I wonder?"
"I borrow so many things, forget where I put them. Terrible habit."
Greel tapped the carpet back.
"The time key was in this bag. It is not there now. Give it to me."
The Doctor began a pantomime of patching all his pockets, muttering, time key, yeah. Now where did I put the wretched thing? Greel leaned forward eagerly, The doctor produced a paper bag and held it out. I've forgotten I had these. Care for a jelly, baby?
Greel struck his hand aside. I won't give you 3 seconds, doctor, and then Mr. Sin will kill the girl.
Knife raised, Mr. Sin began stalking towards Leela with jerky eagerness. Greel began counting.
1, 2, 3, kill her!
Mr. Sin raised his knife, and the doctor produced the saucer-shaped pendant from his pocket.
This what you want? The trionic lattice?
Greel stretched out a claw-like hand.
Give it to me!
The doctor drew back the pendant, holding it just out of reach.
Careful! You nearly made me drop it.
He studied the pendant thoughtfully. Very fragile, this crystalline structure. Probably shatter into 1,000 pieces if I dropped it and trod on it. He tossed the pendant carelessly from one hand to the other.
You arrogant jackanapes! Snarled Greel. I will have you killed!
The hatchet men surged forward eagerly, and the doctor held the pendant high.
Call off your dogs! I get nervous when I'm crowded.
Greel waved the Chinese back, and the doctor smiled. That's better. Greel pointed a skinny finger at Leela.
Give me the time key, and I will spare her life!
The doctor swung the pendant. I never trusted men with long, dirty fingernails. Greel was nearing the end of his patience.
You can trust me to kill you if you do not obey me. Give me the time key.
The doctor swung the pendant to and fro. I'll make a bargain with you. You can have your time key back when we reach the House of the Dragon.
What trickery is this?
I think you're holding 2 friends of mine prisoner.
2 blundering dolts who spied on me. Yes, I have them.
The doctor nodded, pleased to learn that Lightfoot and Jago were still alive. I want them released as well. When we're all free, I'll hand over the time key, and not before. Greel nodded slowly.
Very well.
Right then, you and your chaps can lead the way. Greel picked up Mr. Sin and turned to the Tong hatchet men.
Bring the bag, and the girl.
The doctor said firmly, the bag by all means, the girl stays here.
You would be wise not to press me too far, doctor.
The doctor held up the pendant. Just lead the way. Greel nodded to the Chinese holding Leela. They let her go, and she slumped to the floor. Greel swept out, followed by his hatchet men. The doctor paused and looked down at Leela. Her eyes opened, and she looked steadily at him for a moment, and then closed them again. The doctor smiled and followed the others from the house. As soon as the front door closed behind them, Leela climbed quickly to her feet and moved quietly out of the room. Escape attempt thwarted. Jago and Lightfoot had been thrown back into their kitchen prison for what seemed hours of waiting. Lightfoot heard a bustle of movement and went to listen at the door.
"Seems to be something happening. Sounds as if a big group of people are coming into the house."
"More wongs for the Tong," said Jago gloomily. Lightfoot looked at his watch.
"It'll soon be dawn."
Jago looked alarmed.
"I say, that's when these chaps do things, isn't it? Sacrifice their victims."
"You're thinking of druids, old chap." Jago seemed unconvinced.
"I've been worrying, rather. Can't seem to stop myself. You see, the trouble with me, Lightfoot, I know I talk a lot, but I'm not so jolly brave when it comes to it, old man. Try to be, but I'm not."
Lightfoot nodded understandingly.
"When it comes to it, I don't suppose anyone is." "Why? Thought I'd better tell you, in case I let the side down." Lightfoot clapped him on the shoulder. "You won't, Henry. I know you won't."
The doctor looked admiringly round the dragon room as Greel set Mr. Sin on his throne by the dragon idol. He stared hard into the mannequin's unwinking eyes, as if transmitting some silent signal, and Mr. Sin's head gave the faintest of nods. Satisfied, Greel turned to Ho.
Bring the prisoners here!
The doctor had wandered over to Greel's reassembled organic distillation setup and was studying it thoughtfully. As Greel moved towards him, he turned and said cheerfully,
Very impressive. I'll take the bird's nest soup. This is where you do the cooking, isn't it?
Greel moved so that his body blocked the doctor's view of Mr. Sin. Behind him, the mannequin was crawling into a concealed hatchway set into the idol's side.
You cannot hope to understand its function, Doctor. It is part of a technology far beyond your time. Just simple old-fashioned cannibalism, said the doctor scornfully. This machine just saves you from having to chew the gristly bits. It contains the secret of life.
Rubbish, interrupted the doctor.
Degenerate bunkum. Your superior technology is no more than the twisted lunacy of a scientific dark age. Suddenly the doctor swung round. Where's your pig-brained peeking homunculus got to? I have no further need of Mr. Sin, said Greel smoothly. I have dismissed him.
To distract the doctor's attention, Greel moved to a side table on which stood a chessboard, set out with ornately carved Chinese chessmen. He made an opening move. Almost automatically, the doctor moved to the other side of the board and counted it. Greel moved another piece.
You know the secret of Mr. Sin's construction, Doctor. How can you, in the 19th century, know the secrets of the 51st?
Almost without looking at the board, the doctor moved another piece.
I was with the Filipino army during the final battle for Reykjavik. You lie,
hissed Greel, as he moved again. The doctor studied the board.
Now listen, what's your name? What did you call yourself before you started posing as a Chinese god? I am Magnus Greel, said the black-cloaked figure proudly.
The doctor stretched his hand towards the board.
So, you're Greel, the infamous Minister of Justice of the Supreme Alliance, the Butcher of Brisbane.
It was all becoming clear now, thought the doctor. Greel had created the murderous homunculus with the deliberate intention of triggering off a world war. When the conflict had erupted, Greel and his allies were ready. For a time, the Supreme Alliance, a league of ruthless dictators, had ruled most of the earth. Finally, an alliance of their victims had risen against them, crushing them at the terrible Battle of Reykjavik. After the battle, Greel had disappeared, taking the homunculus with him. He'd been hunted as a war criminal, but had never been found. Now the mystery of his disappearance had been solved. Fleeing in his newly developed time cabinet, he had landed more or less at random in 19th-century China. Weak and sick from the terrible distorting effects of the Sigma beam, he had sheltered in Li Sen Chang's hut. Meanwhile, the time cabinet had been taken by the Emperor's soldiers, given as a present to Lightfoot's family, and finished up in Victorian England. Ever since then, Greel must have been striving to recover the cabinet, handicapped by the recurrent wasting sickness caused by the effects of the Sigma beam, a sickness which could only be held off by the constant supply of young human victims, forced to sacrifice their life essence to keep Magnus Greel alive. Now it appeared that Greel was on the verge of yet another escape, with all his terrible crimes still unpunished. All these reflections from a history that had yet to happen flashed through the doctor's mind while he was reaching for his queen. He moved it forward and said quietly,
Checkmate, I think. Greel's arm flashed out, sweeping the pieces from the board. It is impossible for you to know these things, Doctor.
The doctor looked at him with distaste.
Is it, Greel? I know you're a war criminal from the future, that 100,000 deaths can be laid at your door. Enemies of the state, they were used in the advancement of science. They were slaughtered in filthy machines like that, part of your quest for eternal life.
Greel felt compelled to defend himself. "If you are from the future, you are here because of my work. So, I am remembered only as a war criminal. The winning side writes the history, Doctor. You could not be here if it were not for my work." He waved towards the time cabinet. "I made this possible. I found the resources, the scientists."
"That abortion," said the Doctor scornfully. "Your Sigma Beam experiments were a hopeless failure, Greel."
"I used the cabinet to travel through time," screamed Greel. "I escaped from my enemies.
And look what it did to you."
"There was a temporal distortion of the metabolism. It can be adjusted."
Greel broke off as Lightfoot and Jago were thrust into the room. At the sight of the Doctor, Jago brightened immediately.
"By Jingo, Lightfoot, didn't I tell you?"
He turned sternly towards Greel.
"The game's up, my friend. We have the place surrounded."
"I'm afraid we don't, Mr. Jago," said the Doctor. "All we have at the moment is a rather precarious understanding."
"I have kept my word, Doctor," said Greel impatiently. "Your friends are here. Now give me the time key."
"Not until they're safe out of the house."
The Doctor turned to Jago and Lightfoot.
"Off you go, and hurry."
Jago was already heading for the door, but Lightfoot hesitated.
"Doctor, there are two wretched girls downstairs."
"Take them with you, then. Now go."
Lightfoot hurried after Jago, and Greel glared balefully at the Doctor.
"Your demands become too great, Doctor."
Suddenly, Greel stepped to one side, leaving the Doctor standing directly in line with the dragon idol. There was a sudden crackle of power, and a ray of green light stabbed from the dragon's eyes. Caught by its blast, the Doctor staggered and fell. And Greel snatched the pendant from his hand as he crumpled to the floor. Chapter 15. The Firebomb. The dragon's head swung down as if to blast the Doctor again. But Greel held up his hand.
"Enough! I want him alive!"
Inside the dragon, Mr. Sin reluctantly removed his hands from the laser controls, angry because he had not been allowed to kill. Lightfoot had run back into the room and was kneeling beside the Doctor, whose face was drawn from the effects of the tremendous shock.
"Doctor," he asked anxiously, "are you all right?"
The Doctor opened his eyes with a tremendous effort.
"Beware the eye of the dragon," he whispered, and fell back unconscious.
Greel waved to the awe-stricken Tong guards, who stood waiting by the door.
"Take them!"
Two guards began dragging the Doctor's body away, while others hustled Lightfoot and Jago out of the room. Greel was left alone and triumphant, the time key in his hand. In a corridor at the rear of the building, a Tong guard padded silently towards the back of the house. He had heard faint, suspicious sounds and was going to investigate. As he passed a curtained alcove, Leela stepped out, took his neck in a choking grip, and dragged him into the alcove. The curtains billowed frantically for a moment and were still. Mr. Sin sat patiently inside the head of the dragon. Through the sights of the laser ray, he could see Greel moving towards the time cabinet, swiveling the sighting mechanism to keep his master in view. Mr. Sin reached out and stroked the firing controls. With loving care, Greel pressed the time key into the recess in the front of the cabinet. There was a hum of power and the door slid open. Most of the inside of the cabinet was taken up with complicated yet curiously ramshackle equipment. Greel, however, seemed well satisfied as he checked over the controls.
"Everything exactly as it was. The parallax synchrones fully charged. The Cronus tube set at maximum."
With absorbed intensity, Greel began preparing for his departure.
"The Doctor was wrong," he muttered. My Sigma experiment was a success. A complete success. Soon I shall be free once more.
Thrown back into captivity, Lightfoot went on trying to revive the unconscious doctor. Jago looked on, and the two girls stared dully ahead of them. It was perhaps as well they had no idea of where they were or what was happening to them.
"How is he?"
asked Jago worriedly. Lightfoot looked up.
"There's a curious double heartbeat. Well, there doesn't seem to be any real damage." "Struck down from behind by a dastardly device," said Jago fiercely.
"I think he's trying to say something." Suddenly the doctor spoke.
"There's a one-eyed yellow idol to the north of Kathmandu. There's a little marble cross below the town."
"By Jove, he's reciting Kipling," whispered Jago.
The doctor opened his eyes.
"Nonsense, it's Harry Champion. Kipling used to get very annoyed about that."
He struggled to his feet. "How long was I unconscious?"
"Oh, just a few minutes," said Lightfoot. "A remarkable recovery, Doctor."
The doctor stretched and took a few paces around the room. Jago looked on admiringly.
"What an iron constitution."
The doctor went over to the bed and examined the two dull-eyed girls.
"The broth of oblivion," he muttered.
Straightening up, he stood looking round the room, deep in thought.
"Surely there's something we can do, Doctor?" asked Lightfoot.
The doctor smiled.
"There's always something, Professor. For a start, put those two unfortunate ladies in the corner over there."
Jago and Lightfoot moved to the unresisting girls, and the doctor examined the mattress on which they'd been sitting.
"Excellent, good, thick linen. It'll do very well."
He saw Jago and Lightfoot looking at him expectantly.
"Don't waste time, gentlemen. Help me to wrench that gas pipe away from the wall."
Greel made a final adjustment and stepped back from the time cabinet.
"All is ready. Time to prepare my two partridges."
With gruesome good humour, Greel called over to the dragon idol.
"Why don't you come out of there, Mr. Sin? Sulking because I wouldn't let you kill the doctor? You shall kill him soon enough, when I have drained every atom of his knowledge of the Sigma process. Kill them all, if you wish, before we leave. As soon as I have re-established my metabolic balance, I shall enter the Sigma beam for the second time. This time there will be no mistake."
Engrossed in his plans for escape, Greel failed to see Leela. As, knife in hand, she slipped silently into the room and hid behind a laboratory bench. Suddenly Greel moved away from the cabinet and went to a gong that hung close to the door. Leela realized her danger too late. Greel was about to summon more of his Tong hatchet men. Well, at least she could kill him before they had time to arrive. As Greel struck the gong, Leela jumped upon the bench and launched herself across the room in a flying leap. The gong note was still hanging in the air as she landed on Greel's shoulders, bearing him to the ground. They fought wildly for a moment, but Leela was full of savage anger. Pinning Greel to the ground, she brought her knife blade to his throat. "Die, bent face!" she hissed. Greel tried to hold back her arm, but the knife blade came ever closer. "No!" pleaded Greel. "Spare me!" As Leela tensed her muscles for the final thrust, the room was suddenly full of black-clad Tong hatchet men. They pulled her from their master, wrenching the knife from her hand, and held her helplessly captive. Greel staggered to his feet and hobbled towards her, snatching Leela's knife from the hatchet man who'd taken it.
"Hold her still!"
he commanded. His voice was hoarse with rage and the memory of his own fear.
"Twice this she-devil has tried to kill me! Twice!"
With deliberate slowness, Greel brought the blade to Leela's throat. Then he threw it to the ground.
"No! I have a more fitting fate for you! You shall be the first morsel to feed my regeneration! Put her in the distillation chamber!"
Tong guards dragged the struggling Leela across to the machine. Greel flinched at the memory of how he had begged for mercy. He watched with malevolent satisfaction as the guard thrust Leela into the chamber, securing the door so that only her head was visible, framed between the two metal spheres. Greel went over to the machine and stared into Leela's eyes.
"'Well, Tigress, now it is your turn to beg!'
"'I shall not plead,' said Leela scornfully, "'but I swear this to you. When we are both in the great hereafter, I shall hunt you down and force you through my agony 1,000 times!'
Recoiling from the force of her anger, Greel shouted, "'Silence her!' One of the Chinese thrust a gag into Leela's mouth.
"'Bring the other girls here!'
ordered Greel, and the guards hurried from the room. Jago and Lightfoot had been working hard under the doctor's direction. Now they stood back and looked at the results. The doctor's scheme was simple and appallingly dangerous. The mattress cover, now serving as a kind of cloth balloon, was hanging by the door, gas hissing into it from the broken pipe to which it was tied. From the bottom of the mattress dangled a long strip of cloth, the fuse for the doctor's homemade firebomb. The bed on which the mattress had once rested was tipped on its side across one corner, the water-soaked mattress propped against it for added protection. Behind the improvised shield, the two girls were crouching. By now, they were sufficiently revived to understand their danger and obey the doctor's instructions. Jago watched the billowing of the mattress cover as the gas hissed into it.
"'It's leaking,' he said worriedly. "'I can smell it!'
"'Bound to be some leakage,' said the doctor cheerily. "'Not enough to worry about.' He wasn't nearly so optimistic as he tried to sound. Setting off a gas explosion in such a confined space would be almost as dangerous for the prisoners as for their enemies. But a single, devastating stroke was needed to dispose of as many guards as possible before they tackled Greel himself.
"'Tisn't that I'm worried,' said Jago hurriedly. "'But I'd hate to be gassed before we get a chance to see if this stunt works.'
The doctor gave him a reassuring smile.
"'Greel won't keep us waiting long. He needs his nourishment.'
"'His what?'
"'Greel is dying. His body is constantly wasting away. He is trying to cheat death by feeding upon the life force of others.'
He glanced at the two women in the corner and then at Lightfoot.
"'You understand me, Professor?'
"'No, I think so, the principle at least.
The principle is false in any case. All Greel achieves is a postponement of the inevitable.'
Jago interrupted them.
"'Listen, Doctor, I think they're coming.'
"'Then you know what to do. Your matches, please, Professor.'
Lightfoot and Jago joined the two men behind the bed. The doctor called softly to the two girls.
"'Now remember, you two. Get out of this house just as soon as you can, and don't stop running till you're 1 mile away.'
Too terrified to speak, both girls nodded.
The footsteps were at the door now. The doctor lit a match, touched it to the fuse, and joined the huddled group in the corner.
"'Up, troops, anatomy!' whispered Jago excitedly.
They watched the flickering yellow flame run up the strip of linen. Just as the door was flung open, it touched the gas-filled mattress cover.
There was an astonishingly loud explosion, and the doorway disappeared in a sheet of flame. Black smoke filled the room, and when it cleared, the guards who had been nearest the door lay stunned on the floor, while the rest ran screaming down the corridor. "Quick," shouted the doctor, and choking in the clouds of smoke, the captives dashed into the corridor. The doctor snatched up a hatchet from a fallen guard as he ran out of the room. Obedient to the doctor's instructions, the two girls were already running for the back door. The doctor led Jago and Lightfoot towards the main stairs. Busy at the controls of his organic distillation machine, Greel heard the boom of the explosion and the screams of his guards.
He hesitated, moved towards the door, then returned to the controls, looking threateningly at Leela.
Whatever has happened, there will be no escape for you. The talons of Greel will shred your flesh.
He stretched out his skinny hands to the main control as the door was flung open and the doctor ran into the room.
Greel! Shouted the doctor and threw the hatchet with all his force.
Determined on his revenge, Greel snatched at the master lever, but the doctor's hatchet was aimed not at Greel himself, but at the main power cable of his machine. The hatchet severed the cable in a shower of sparks, and the machine went dead just as the lever was pulled. The doctor ran to the cabinet and threw open the doors. Leela fell into his arms, and he snatched the gag from her mouth. Greel was scuttling towards the dragon idol.
Kill! Sin! He screamed. Kill them all!
Down! Shouted the doctor. He pulled Leela behind the laboratory bench, just as the green ray blazed from the dragon's eyes. There was a fierce crackle of energy, and smoke filled the air as chunks of blazing masonry were blasted from the walls. Inside the dragon, Mr. Sin was hunched over the controls, peering through the sights for a living target. Greel himself was hiding behind the dais on which the idol stood. The doctor, Leela, Lightfoot, and Jago were all sheltering behind the heavy laboratory bench, which stood by the door. Like two armies on the battlefield, the opposing forces had occupied opposite ends of the long room. Greel shouted from his hiding place,
"I will spare your lives, all of you, if you will leave now!"
"Very magnanimous, Magnus," called the doctor.
"Then go!"
"With your trigger-happy little friend still covering us? No, thank you!"
"I'm offering you your freedom, you fools!" screamed Greel.
The doctor looked at the others.
"We'd be cut down before we reached the door."
Leela nodded.
"I think so, too. There's no truth in him."
"We're staying put, Magnus," shouted the doctor.
"Then you will die here, all of you!"
The doctor peered over the bench at the huddled figure on the steps.
"You might die first, Greel. You don't sound too healthy, and your food supply is halfway across London by now."
Hobbling up the steps of the dragon idol, Greel snarled,
"Sin, burn away that bench!"
The dragon's eye glowed fiercely, and the doctor and the others ducked down as laser bolt after laser bolt sizzled into the bench. With every shot, a chunk of blazing wood was blasted away.
"If only I had a gun,"
whispered Lightfoot fiercely. Jago nodded.
"Or even a catapult. I was a dab hand with a catapult as a nipper."
Another chunk of wood was blasted from the bench, which by now was getting noticeably smaller.
"He is cutting down our cover, Doctor," said Leela calmly. "Soon one of us will be hit."
A spasm of pain racked Greel's deformed body.
"Hurry, Sin, hurry!" he croaked. "There is little time left to me."
Not all the servants of Wang Chiang had fled after the explosion. A few of the more fanatical had stayed behind, huddling together in the basement. The sound of the laser battle in the dragon room had encouraged them to emerge. The great Wang Chiang was destroying his enemies with his magic ray. Would he not take a terrible vengeance if his servants deserted him? Gathering all the weapons they could find, the remnant of the Tong hatchet men crept towards the dragon room, determined to prove their loyalty while there was still time. Dodging yet another laser bolt, the doctor sensed movement behind him and turned. Tong warriors, armed with hatchets, knives, and revolvers, were flooding into the room. Now the doctor and his friends were caught in a crossfire between Tong and dragon. The position was hopeless. Inside the dragon idol, the eyes of Mr. Sin blazed with excitement and pleasure. He was weary of shooting at a block of wood. Here were living targets. Gleefully, he crouched over the controls and swung the sights. The laser crackled again, and most of the tightly packed knot of Tong warriors in the doorway died with its first blast.
Mr. Sin fired again and again, picking off the survivors. "Stop!" roared Greel. "Stop, Sin! I command you! I am your master! Obey me!"
Sin was deaf to all commands. Crazed with bloodlust, he mowed down the fleeing hatchet men until the doorway was choked with their bodies. The last of the guards twisted in the laser blast and dropped to the ground, a heavy revolver falling from his hand. It fell not too far from the bench. Leela nudged Jago and pointed. Jago looked at the distance he would have to cover and shook his head firmly.
"Not a chance, my dear." "He cannot shoot at two targets at once."
Jago's eyes widened.
"You mean if one of us draws the blighter's fire, the other can get to the gun?"
"Me," said Leela flatly, "because I am quicker." With the Tong members all disposed of, Sin returned his attention to the bench. A well-aimed laser bolt sheared off one leg, and the bench lurched dangerously. Lightfoot grabbed it.
"Can't hold it for long," he yelled. "Another few minutes and we're done for."
The doctor snatched up a hatchet.
"Ready, then? All together. Now!"
Three things happened more or less at once. Jago popped up like a jack-in-the-box, deliberately drawing Sin's fire. The doctor hurled the hatchet at the dragon's head, and Leela sprinted to the cover of an iron chest on the other side of the room, scooping up the revolver on the way. Although it bounced harmlessly off the dragon's head, the doctor's hatchet probably saved Jago's life. The sight of it whirling towards him in the sights spoiled Sin's aim, and his laser bolt crackled over Jago's head as he dropped flat behind the wobbling barrier of the bench.
I say, he gasped, in the comedian's traditional opening phrase. "A funny thing nearly happened to me just now. Has she got the gun?"
A bullet whizzed over Jago's head and they all ducked down.
"Hey, who are you shooting at, young lady?"
called Lightfoot indignantly. They heard Leela's voice from the other side of the room.
"Sorry, I never fired one of these before."
Leela's favorite weapon was the Sevateem crossbow, with which she'd grown up, though she had used a hand blaster in an earlier adventure with the doctor. But she had a natural affinity with weapons, and she soon worked out how to use the big revolver. Taking careful aim, she fired at the glowing eyes in the dragon idol's head. She missed by inches. The great head swung round, and as the eyes shot out their deadly ray, and the great iron chest glowed red beneath the impact of a laser bolt, Leela ducked down and waited her chance for another shot. Jago helped Lightfoot to support the weight of the tottering bench. Peering round the edge, the doctor saw Greel crawling across the room towards the open time cabinet. He had suddenly become much feebler, and could only move with agonizing slowness.
"It's no good, Greel," shouted the doctor. "You're finished."
Painfully, Greel lifted his head.
"I can still escape you, Doctor, as I escaped my enemies before."
He inched nearer the time cabinet.
"Don't try it, Greel," warned the doctor. "If you activate the Zygma beam, it will mean certain death for all of us."
"Lies, Doctor, lies,"
shrieked Greel.
"Listen to me. The Zygma beam is at full stretch. Try to trigger it again and it will collapse. There'll be a huge implosion and you'll be at the center of it. The Zygma experiment was a disastrous failure."
The Greel's enormous vanity would not allow him to accept the truth.
"It was a success, Doctor. A total, brilliant success."
Greel was at the time cabinet now and about to step inside. He saw the dragon's head swing towards him.
"Sin, no!"
he screamed. But Sin's bloodlust was totally in control now. To him, Greel was just another living target. Greel dropped behind the cabinet as a laser bolt sizzled past him. Sin's attempt to kill Greel gave Leela her chance. Leaping to her feet, she held the revolver in both hands, took careful aim and squeezed the trigger. The heavy bullet blasted through the focusing crystal that was the dragon's eye, and the head of the idol exploded in smoke and flame. Greel leapt to his feet and sprang for the cabinet, but the doctor was too quick for him.
He grappled with Greel, pulling him back from the time cabinet. They struggled for a moment, then Greel called up the last of his failing strength. With a frantic lunge, he broke free of the doctor's grip, staggered forward, and crashed into the jumble of electronic machinery that filled the center of the cabinet. There was a blaze of fierce blue sparks, a muffled explosion. Blasted from the cabinet, Greel crashed to the ground. They all gathered round the huddled, black-clad figure. Through the slits of the mask, Greel's eyes stared sightlessly up at them. "Is Bent Face dead?" asked Leela. Lightfoot glanced curiously at her. "Why do you call him Bent Face?"
"Because he is."
Curiously, Lightfoot reached out for the mask. The doctor gently restrained him.
"I shouldn't, Professor."
"Why not?"
"Look."
Greel's prostrate body was collapsing, crumbling, dwindling away to dust before their eyes. In seconds, there was nothing left of him, just a heap of dusty black clothing at their feet.
"Cellular collapse," said the doctor softly.
"In all my years as a pathologist, I've never seen anything like it," gasped Lightfoot.
"Well, let's hope you never do again, Professor."
"But what was he?" asked Jago. "Where was he from?"
The doctor clapped him on the shoulder.
"A foe from the future, Henry. Let's leave it at that."
Crossing to the time cabinet, the doctor closed and locked it, just as a small, malevolent figure leapt from the top of the dragon idol straight onto Leela's shoulders, a long, sharp knife in its hand. Jago and Lightfoot ran forward to pull it off. The knife flashed down, and Lightfoot staggered back with a cry, blood welling from a wound in his arm.
Locking his legs tightly around Leela's neck, Mr. Sin raised the knife again. The doctor sprang forward, thrusting Jago out of the way. He wrenched the dummy from Leela's shoulders with one savage heave. Leela staggered back, choking, and the doctor dashed the mannequin to the ground with all his strength. He lifted it, slammed it to the floor face down, groped between beneath the embroidered tunic, and wrenched out a slim metallic tube, flung it to the ground, and stamped on it.
"That was what you might call his fuse," he gasped. "He's harmless now. As harmless as a ventriloquist's dummy."
The doctor disentangled the crystal pendant from the pile of black clothes, dropped it beside Sin, and ground it to fragments beneath his heel. The anger faded from his face, and he smiled wearily at the others.
"There! The Zygma experiment is finally at an end."
He paused.
"Listen!"
They heard a bell ringing in the distance and a faint, muffled cry.
"The Muffin Man," said the doctor happily. "Come on, I'll treat you all to some muffins."
They said their farewells over hot tea and buttered muffins in Professor Lightfoot's house. Then the doctor insisted politely but firmly that he and Leela must be on their way. He had no wish to become involved in the lengthy investigations that were sure to follow. Leela was still munching the last of the muffin as they strolled through the night streets back to the TARDIS. Lightfoot, his arm in a sling, was doing his best to teach Leela the rudiments of polite behaviour.
"For example, I would say, 'One lump or two, Miss Leela,' and you would reply, 'One will suffice, thank you.'"
"I suppose I want two."
"No, no, my dear, one lump for ladies."
"But then why ask me?"
Lightfoot scratched his head.
"You come along, Leela," called the doctor.
They turned the corner, and there was the TARDIS where they had left it.
"Professor Lightfoot has been explaining about tea," said Leela. "It is very complicated."
The doctor was in a hurry to be off.
"Well, unfortunately, we don't have time for any more tea parties. Goodbye, Professor. Goodbye, Henry."
He shook hands with them both, unlocked the TARDIS door, and ushered Leela inside. Rather astonished by this abrupt disappearance, Lightfoot turned to Jago.
"I thought he said he was leaving. What is that contraption?"
Jago hadn't the slightest idea, but was reluctant to admit it.
Provided by Scotland Yard, he said vaguely. Look, it says police on it. Perhaps it's a small, portable police station.
There was a wheezing, groaning sound, and the TARDIS faded away before their astonished eyes.
Extraordinary, breathed Lightfoot. I just don't believe it.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again, said Jago. Our policemen are wonderful.
As they turned to go, Lightfoot was still spluttering.
It's impossible. It's quite impossible.
Jago nodded appreciatively.
Yeah, good trick that, eh?
His eye was caught by a poster for his own theatre. Chang's face looked out at him, and Jago reminded himself that he would have to start looking for a new top-of-the-bill act.
Yes, said Jago thoughtfully. I venture to say that not even the great Li Sen Chang himself could have pulled off a better trick than that.
He took Lightfoot's arm and led him away.
Now then, Professor, I suggest we round off this extraordinary evening with a celebratory libation. So happens I know a little tavern not too far from here.
Chang's face stared out from the poster as their footsteps faded away into the fog. Doctor Who and the Talons of Wang Chiang by Terence Dix was read by Christopher Benjamin.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.